Macmillan Audio presents Carnegie Hill by Jonathan Vatner. Narrated for you by Cassandra Campbell. For Jules, who never forgot. He discovered the cruel paradox by which we always deceive ourselves twice about the people we love, first to their advantage, then to their disadvantage. Albert Camus, A Happy Death. Part 1. 1. The Meeting. Unsure of the proper attire for a co-op board meeting, Pepper decided to err on the side of stuffiness. She settled on a heather gray skirt suit with matching cloche, a raw silk blouse, nude hose and heels, and a 3-carat diamond choker that Rick had given her the past Valentine's Day, 2 months after they met. He was possibly the most successful asset manager under 40 in New York, and he loved to spend money on her. She didn't need it, but she also didn't mind it. Pepper had been dressing up a lot lately. It was a shortcut to looking mature, even if she didn't feel that way. Despite being on the verge of 33, she still felt like a teenager on the inside. Maybe it was because she'd lived at home until a few months ago, or because she'd never had a job that felt like a career, or because she wasn't married yet, unlike most of her friends, including her younger sister Maisie, or because she didn't have sturdy opinions about politics and religion and everything else that people argued about, or because she still used her parents' credit card and resented them for giving her advice. She didn't know how other people grew up. She was in therapy with Dr. Riffler to figure that out, but in almost 3 years she'd gotten nowhere. She hoped that her new life with Rick in the Chelmsford Arms would speed things up. Among the fears her mother had instilled in her, forgetting to wash off her makeup at night, eating more than a bite of dessert, airing too many opinions in mixed company, one of the biggest was the fear of arriving at a gathering empty-handed. So she perused the bottles in Rick's commercial-grade wine refrigerator, his main contribution to their shared life. Even though he earned a good living as a wealth manager, his furniture had been a pastiche of sidewalk and Craigslist finds and the detritus of former roommates, and all his books were ragged and swollen as if they'd been laundered. But he invested in wine, sometimes spending thousands on a bottle at auction, and she liked scanning the labels in search of a tempting vintage. The whites were kept at 45 degrees on the left-hand side, the reds at 58 degrees on the right. Anything from the top two rows was for everyday drinking or hostess gifts. The middle rows were dedicated to a gradient of special occasions, holidays on top and birthdays toward the bottom. She'd never seen him open a bottle from the very bottom row, ancient Bordeaux with inscrutable handwritten labels. Their musty secrecy gave her a chill. Pepper chose a Sauvignon Blanc from the top row and ran it by Rick, who was drinking a chocolate protein shake, one determined gulp at a time, while replying to Facebook messages, probably from people he'd met once in person and then had become bosom buddies with online. He was kind to everyone. His 2,000 Facebook friends, strangers in elevators and in restaurants, even telemarketers, panhandlers, and street poets. The truth was that his effusive friendliness often annoyed her. He couldn't meet someone without trying to charm them. "Okay if I take this to the meeting?" she asked, showing Rick the label.
"Oh, that's a good one," he said.
He was so handsome. A dark wave of smooth, gelled hair, powerful nose, dimpled chin. She could barely look at him without getting wobbly. He didn't quite have the face of a model or actor, but diet and exercise, styling and
sample complete. Ready to continue?